This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above-average investor. And you might think that saving and investing is all about money, but when you think about it, it's just as much about setting priorities. It's necessary to make sure that you save and invest consistently to be successful. And the way to do that is to make it a priority. And we all have various priorities, but it should always be near the top of your list. And it's about dedicating yourself to learning as much as you possibly can and controlling your spending, right? Having as much as you possibly can to invest on a regular basis. So we do our best to guide you along in that saving and investing process, hopefully point you to some resources and help you make decisions, positive decisions, the right decisions, but ultimately the rest is up to you. Making decisions is probably the hardest part. So this time of year, we tend to think more about giving to charities, maybe to help make lives better for the less fortunate. And there are many vehicles out there to help you do that. Now, have you? What about donor-advised funds? These have become bigger, and they're getting bigger. And in 2016, donor-advised funds reached a record $23 billion in contributions. In fact, Fidelity Charitable surpassed the United Way worldwide as the largest charity in terms of funds raised. So more and more people are going this route. And one of the big things that make them so popular is how easy they are to use. And many of the larger ones, such as Fidelity Charitable, Schwab Charitable, Vanguard Charitable, have user-friendly web solutions that make donating and granting pretty easy. So proponents of donor advised funds believe that this gives flexibility, the ability to make donations to the account and receive immediate tax benefits for doing so while being allowed to disperse the money from accounts according to your own timetable. Have a little more control over those charitable donations, right? You can get that write-off today, but maybe it gets sent to that organization in the future. Now, there's some things to consider when figuring out how to do this, how to set it up, and answering these five questions can help you narrow down the field. One is, what are the investment minimums? So how much do you plan to contribute initially and going forward on an ongoing basis? How high are the fees associated with it? Because there are fees involved. Do the investments have reasonable costs? Certainly, in today's world, you want to avoid as many costs as you possibly can. And there's some other questions that you need to ask. But if you're planning on giving to charity before the end of the year, this may be a way, something to consider. You can read more about them on Morningstar.com. And we do have a link up there on InvestTalk.com as well to that. So time to go to our 24-hour listener line, however, and check for questions. Here's one that came in before today's Invest Talk.
Hey, guys. This is Jason in San Antonio. Question of the day is if you could maybe touch on some of the differences, pros and cons between averaging up and averaging down. Is there certain times when you might want to do one versus the other, pros and cons and so forth? My primary method of trading is swing trading in the short term holds. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Well, averaging up and averaging down, these basically is adding to your position. You have a current position, and it's either up, and you want to add to it, and your average price will raise because you are buying at a higher price. But on the flip side, you may be down in a position, you want to average down. Now, historically, averaging down tends to be a bad idea, meaning you're putting good money after bad, you know, a down position. The positive is that a lot of sometimes you might be, if as long as you might be wrong in the short term, but if you're right in the long term, it's going to be great because you're getting it at a cheaper price. I can think of a recent position that we've done for clients where we did average down, and typically we don't like to do that, but it was such a screaming buy to us that it was a great deal, and it's actually turned around, and it's even higher than our first purchase. So we did really, really well on that. But you know, typically the smarter thing to do is averaging up, meaning you've invested, it's doing well, and you want to keep putting money in that particular direction because, you know, the kind of the trend is your friend is the old adage, right? And you were right the first time, and as long as the fundamentals of what you're seeing is still lining up, even paying a little bit more can be a good thing. So historically, it's usually better to average up than average down. It sounds counterintuitive, but that's typically the better way to go. You're a swing trader, so I think it's even more so the fact that staying with that trend is probably the smarter way to go. Now let's look at our list of topics for today. Don't panic, there's still hope, and saving to an older age does take some strategy, right? So we're going to talk about if you're over 50 and you're still behind in your savings, and frankly, most people over their 50s are, so don't feel bad. We're going to talk about three ways for you to catch up. That's our main talking point today, but we have a few others as well. One is retirement planning, six things no one typically tells you about. Some little, I don't want to say tricks, but maybe surprises that a lot of people have when they get into retirement. Kind of blindsides them a little bit. Usually not a major issue, but these are little things that tend to be, that can be very impactful if you're not aware of them. And also, tax reform was passed. I don't want to say it was passed. It was generally passed. It still has to be reconciled between the House and the Senate, but you know the passage in the Senate it gives it a lot higher odds that it'll actually be passed eventually. So we're going to talk about that as well. And then lastly, the yield curve. The yield curve has been flattening for some time now, and we're going to talk about why that's actually a good thing. The typical standard mantra is that flattening yield curve means that the economy is slowing, or it's telling us that the economy is slowing. But what does that mean for stock prices? And we're going to talk about that as well coming up on the show. So those are my main talking points, but ultimately it's what is on your mind that I want to talk about. What are you thinking about? And our goal is to answer your questions for today. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. So who gives most to charity? The best investors? The best investor is the champ. Is the champ there too. Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are the most charitable American billionaires. Buffett has given away more than $46 billion since 2000. So if you have money, maybe you give it away. Let's work on that. Any money questions? Check in now at 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to talk to Sean in San Jose. How are you doing, Sean?
My wife and I are business owners of a small business located in the Bay Area here, and we're looking to get her set up with an initial retirement account of some sort. We need to get some advice on taking that route, if we're able to do it through a local bank or a suggested institution. I'd like to get some feedback from you on that.
You probably do a SEP IRA, SEP, have you heard of that?
Yes, I have.
And you can also do now what's called an individual 401k. But that's harder, a little bit harder to set up, an individual 401k, you know. But I would probably suggest a SEP. Is it just you and your wife, or is there employees?
Correct. It's just myself and my wife, and the rest of the folks that work there are contract workers.
Okay. So then a SEP would probably be the first step. You could put like $15,000, $16,000 away, you know. And if you want to do more than that, then you're going to have to get a little bit more sophisticated. And it would be my suggestion that if you're going to do a SEP IRA, it's just like open up a regular IRA. You just go to like a Schwab or E-Trade or whatever you're comfortable with and okay. just open it up. Almost anywhere, Fidelity, Vanguard, anywhere you want. And you say, I want to set up a SEP IRA.
Okay, now you said $15,000 to $16,000. Is that an annual contribution?
Yes.
Or is that over the... Okay, got it.
Yes.
And what would I typically look to, or minimum that I would have to be able to contribute, and what would that frequency be?
There is no minimum, just a maximum. You could put $1,000 in this year. That's all, because you didn't make any money. You could put in zero next year because you didn't make any money. Third year, you made a ton of money. You could put $15,000 in that year.
Great, great. Okay. And can you tell us on how aggressive, I'm not sure if you can do the calculation. She's approximately 30 years of age right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how aggressive should we be getting to putting this thing away, you know, with rough calculations?
You should be as aggressive as you can in the early years, but usually it's a conundrum because in the early years you're not making a lot of money. You know, but
right.
really the more advantage to you is to put as much as you can early on, and therefore it has more years to grow. That's the smartest thing to do, but sometimes it's impossible to do because you don't make a lot of money, you know. But, you know, you should be as aggressive as you can without having a miserable life. How's that? You know?
Certainly. Fair enough. Fair enough. Going to the default contribution, should we probably just spread it across between low risk, medium risk, and high risk?
No, you probably should be in mostly high risk because you're so young. And again, that's a personality thing. If you guys are very, very, very conservative and kind of worrywarts, if you're that kind of, that's your nature, and I'm not saying that as a negative thing. I'm just stating a fact. If you're the type of person that worries, then you probably won't want to be as aggressive. But at age 30 or in your 30s, you really should be aggressive because you got lots and lots of years.
Great. Thanks for the insight. I do appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Sean. Thank you very much. We're going to go to Brian in San Diego. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
What's the difference between a Roth IRA and a standard IRA?
Okay. And you know what? I'll bet you, Brian, there are a lot of people out there have the same question, just don't want to ask it. It's very simple. Both are retirement vehicles, obviously.
Right.
Roth IRA, the only difference you have is how the taxes are treated, okay? In a Roth IRA, you make money, you earn money right now, and you say, I'm going to put my money into a Roth IRA. Well, the money that you're putting in there is taxed, income taxed. So it's after tax. It's just regular money that you have left over you're going to put in there. Now, a regular IRA is after tax. In other words, if you put $3,000 in a Roth IRA, it's after tax money. If you put $3,000 in a regular IRA, you get to take that $3,000 off your adjusted gross income, so you don't have to pay taxes on it. Now, once it's in the IRAs, since a regular IRA, you never pay taxes on the money going in, when you start taking it out when you're 65, you have to pay taxes on it every dime you take out of a regular IRA. So let's say you put $3,000 and over the years it grew to $10,000. When you take that $10,000 out, you got to pay tax on the entire $10,000. In a Roth IRA, since you paid tax on the money when you put it in, and it grows from $3,000 to $10,000, when you start taking it out, you never have to pay taxes on it. So that whole $10,000, you don't have to pay taxes on now, ever. So on the growth in a Roth IRA, on the growth, as it grows over the years, you never pay taxes in a Roth, but you do pay taxes on all the money in a regular IRA.
And there's no difference in distribution as far as the age goes. You have to be, what, 59 and a half or something like that?
On a Roth, the difference is you never have to take it out.
Okay.
But on a regular IRA, you have to start taking out at 70 and a half.
Okay.
Because they want their tax dollars on that money.
Sir, you're a scholar. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the call.
Nice evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. And welcome your questions at 888-99-CHART.
The
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. And if you're over 50 and you're still behind in your savings, don't feel bad. It's pretty standard in today's world, right? We all focus on different things nowadays, pre-50 than we used to, and we have longer lives than typically we'd expect 20, 30, 40 years ago, right? So being 50, I think, is kind of the new 40 in a lot of ways. So don't feel bad if you haven't saved. And in fact, 46% of baby boomers have nothing saved for retirement, zero. And that's according to a study by Insured Retirement Institute. And less than a quarter, less than 25%, believe they have enough money to last through retirement. So don't feel bad. But there are some ways that you can catch up. And the first is to consider working a few more years. Now, I know it's not the answer that most want to hear, but just that extra few years can really go a long way when you're doing that full retirement analysis. You know, this is something we do for clients, is we help them figure out when they're able to retire based on their current savings, investment strategy, expenses both today and in the future, and income both today and in the future, like Social Security, pensions, things like that. Now, just those few extra years can go a long way, and the reason is because A, Social Security increases every single year you delay taking it. So your full retirement age is 66. If you wait all the way till 70 to claim Social Security, you'll receive 132% of your monthly benefit. So for example, if your typical full benefit is $1,400 per month, which is about the average for Social Security beneficiaries, if you wait till 70, you receive $1,850. It's a big change. And obviously, the longer you work, the more you'll be able to put away in your retirement accounts rather than drawing down those expenses, right? Drawing it down for expenses, at least. So just working a few more years can really change that math in a dramatic way. So don't think that if you're working longer, it's, I have to work 10 more years. It can be just a few more years can do wonders. Now, number two, take advantage of catch-up contributions. Now, whether you have a 401k, IRA, Roth IRA, it doesn't matter. In 2017, this year, savers under 50 could contribute $18,000 to their 401k, $5,500 to their IRA. Those over 50 can save an extra $6,000 in a 401k, so up to $24,000, and another grand in an IRA, $6,500. So doing those catch-up contributions can really make a big difference as well, especially when you do them year after year up until you eventually retire. And then number three is making sure that you're on the best investment path for you. And whether you put that money into a 401k or an IRA, certainly you want to take advantage of a full employer match. We always talked about that in your 401k. And you know, having something like our active 401k subscription can really help you dial in that strategy in your 401k, that asset allocation, so that you maximize that savings there. It's very, very important to do that. It's not just about the saving amount you save in that 401k, because typically that's the best part about it, is it's an automatic saver. But it's not the end-all be-all, right? It's making sure you're invested properly in that 401k account. Maybe it's a more aggressive strategy, or just having the right mix of funds ultimately, and that's what active 401k is about. And then in your IRA, you're not going to get that employer match. However, you're going to have a wider investment universe to choose from, right? If you have an IRA brokerage account, you know, we manage a lot of IRAs for clients, and that allows us to invest for income and try to compound that income over time, and that can be a big advantage as well. So making sure you're on the best investment path is step number three to getting caught up if you haven't saved enough in retirement. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's get back to our 24-hour listener line and pick up another question at 888-99-CHART.
Okay, let's go to Mark in Stockton. How you doing, Mark?
Yeah, I just left my company about a month ago, and I just wanted to know what I should do with my 401k plan.
Great. I'm glad to hear that they have 401ks. Most companies do these days, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. You can do two things. Did you start a new job?
Yes, I did.
And they have a 401k also?
No, they don't have a 401k. I'm a contractor, so they don't have any benefits.
Then what you want to do is you want to roll the 401k into a IRA.
Okay.
Okay, and it's very simple to do. Don't think it's complex. You can roll that into any type of account. You can go to a bank and roll it into a savings account. You can roll it into a mutual fund account. You can roll it into a stock account. Any place you want to will roll it into. And then you can hire somebody to manage it for you, like us. You know, we manage all types of IRAs. And we do rollover 401ks into IRAs all the time.
Is there any fees to roll over the money from 401k
Free. It's no cost. Now, if you have a 401k and it's invested in certain mutual funds, you may have to sell off those mutual funds. In other words, put it all in money market before you roll it over.
Oh, okay.
But just call anybody who you want to help manage your money, or you can do it yourself. You can go to E-Trade or someplace else. Call them up and say, I want to roll this 401k, and they will send you the paperwork. There's also a form that you're going to have to get from your old 401k, from whoever's running that, your plan operator. There'll be a form that needs to be filled out. If you want us to help you with it, give us a call. We'll be happy to do most of that for you.
Okay. Maybe I'll give you a call then.
Okay. Appreciate the call, Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give me a call.
Our podcast continues next. Here's a true or false question for you. You have less tolerance for risk than you used to. True or false? Most investors have more doubts about the reliability of advice, the stability of companies. But at the same time, you still believe that the stock market offers the most promise for your retirement savings. Investors are shorter on trust, but they're still investors. So KPP Financial has a question for you. If you could form a partnership with a financial advisor rather than the typical client relationship, would that make more sense to you? Well, the principals at KPP Financial invest their own money right along with yours. That makes you more of a partner than a client. When they make those buy and sell decisions for you, they're impacting their retirement too. KPP Financial, independent thinking, shared success. And now let's get back to the podcast.
Listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, we'll go to Will in the Bay Area. Hi, Will, how you doing?
Hey, okay, I just wanted to get some insight, more insight, I guess. I kind of think I know what happens, but with when the market goes down,
yes,
what is that mechanism? How does it really work?
Yeah. No, I've had
where is the money going? Say, for instance, I know where it goes for those who get out. They have it. But they also lose a penny or two. But say, for instance, someone stays in. What happens to their money? Is that just a discounted thing? Or how does it work?
Okay. Let's say you own a stock. That's what we're talking about, right, Will? Stock is at $30 a share. And the stock goes down in price. It goes down to $20 a share. Where did that $10 go? Is that what your question is?
Yeah, and what causes it?
It's very simple. Let's say I owned a share of stock and you want to buy it. Mm-hmm. I paid $20 a share for this stock and you said, I want to buy it, but I'm only going to give you $19 a share. And I'm going to say, no, I'm not going to sell it to you for that. I want 20 or 21. You say, no. You're going to pay me 19. And I then get nervous and get desperate, and I sell it to you for $19 a share.
Mm-hmm.
That $1 disappeared. It vanishes. Mm-hmm. It's gone.
Right.
It doesn't go into anybody's pocket. It's just gone.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it just disappeared.
It's gone. So if the whole market goes down 20%, that money just vanishes.
Right. And it's based on, that's what I thought, it's based on that dollar per dollar discount, either by leaving or bidding.
That's right.
The market is just nothing but an auction area. This person says, I'll bid this. This person says, I want that. And they come to an agreement or they don't. And the stocks go up and down based on that. That's simple as that.
So, yeah, and if I had all the money and you just kept saying, well, I don't care, I don't care, I don't care. And eventually I got to give you some.
Exactly. So eventually you'll say, you know what? Let's say I have that $20 stock. And the stock gives you 10% income in dividends a year. The stock keeps growing its earnings forever. Mm-hmm. That stock has a value, but what that value is between you and I.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are deciding that. And you may decide, I'm not going to pay more than $10. Mm-hmm. And if I can't find anybody else and I need to sell it, that stock's going to go down to $10 to sell it to you.
Right. Now, what if you just refuse to budge? If you're a holder...
Then that means you have a locked market and nothing gets sold and nothing gets bought.
Right, yeah, and your stock will just sit there.
Just sit there. That's it.
Right, yeah. Okay.
We appreciate
that's kind of what goes on with some stocks.
That's exactly what does. Yeah. Very small stocks very much often just sit there. Good luck, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, 888-99-CHART is our number. We're going to go to Art in Milipitas.
Hey, I was listening to you about the best time to invest for the time of the year.
Yes.
I got a retirement, but I got about $20,000 in a reserve. Just money market.
Okay.
To invest that now, I'm pretty flexible about taking the risk in a straight dividend fund.
Okay.
Would it be conservative or into a moderate allocation fund?
I would do it in a moderate allocation. You're retired?
Right.
You don't want to take a lot of risk on this stock, this money.
I got two moderate allocation funds
that are
five-star funds, but I tended to sway toward the dividends because they pay you monthly income.
Oh, yeah. I love those dividends, Art.
That's what I really enjoyed about listening to your expertise in reference to dividends.
People, dividends make up a large part of the return on a portfolio. Don't ignore them. Don't ignore the dividends. But, Art, what do you want to do with this $20,000?
Well, the question being, Steve, moderate allocation doesn't give me a monthly dividend check.
No.
But I kind of like the idea on a tax basis in a taxable account, this reserve $20,000 I have.
Mm-hmm.
If I take it in a dividend fund and it pays out monthly, I'm at a reduced tax rate on the income that I have coming out.
You know, Art, all I can suggest is just get it invested.
Exactly. If I had an emergency, if I needed anything, I got about $75,000 in taxable accounts.
Oh, see.
If I needed an emergency, I could get out at any time.
Yeah,
anytime. I'm not restricted on staying in.
I definitely put that money to work.
I enjoy your expertise, Steve. You do a
Thanks.
Great job.
Art, I appreciate your calls. You guys make the show. I just enjoy it. That's all.
I think you do outstanding.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Now let's take a quick look at, let's talk about tax reform a little bit. It's shaping up in Congress, right? The tax reform is probably going to happen. It's just a matter of reconciling the two bills in the House and the Senate after the Senate narrowly passed at 51-49, which makes that reconciliation still a little hairy. I still think it's probably going to be passed. If you think about this, this is for corporations, and who has access to Trump? Well, corporations do, and I think if you have access to Trump and you're fairly smart, you can. I think he's a pretty easy president to work with because, I mean. The way I would go about it is Trump kind of has an ego. So if you tell him how great he is, tell him how well he's doing, you're probably going to get your way. And those that have access are lobbyists, corporations, very wealthy people, you know, big donors. And they're the ones that I think are driving this tax bill. And you know, they're the ones that drive Congress in general. So it's not a shock to me that this is getting passed because those that benefit the most are going to be large corporations. You know, the tax rate for the United States is high in relation to most mature economies. However, the effective tax rate is relatively on the low side. Not the lowest, but certainly on the low side because of the loopholes. Now, certain special interest tax provisions are being repealed. So to an extent that is happening a little bit, but not, I think, to the extent to where it's going to make up for this drop in revenue that you're seeing, and you can see that by, you know, the deficit will explode. I think increased about $1 trillion over the next 10 years. That's certainly going to be an issue. But a 25% corporate tax rate beginning next year is going to be very helpful for a lot of firms, especially the firms that make money, that are profitable. It will help for pass-through entities. It'll help in certain ways as well, like S corporations and things like that. There'll be some ways that companies can fully expense their manufacturing and capital expenditures when they make it, as opposed to depreciating that over, you know, many, many years. So they'll be able to take that tax deduction right away. And then repatriation of overseas earnings, about 10% tax on that will be helpful for certain corporations. But I think it'll be, won't be as used as much as most of the market's thinking. So that's really this how you sum up the tax bill. Positive overall for corporations. The standard deduction is going to rise for a lot of average Americans. So if you're not somebody who itemizes, I think this will probably benefit you. But if you're somebody who itemizes, you take your interest deduction on your mortgage and various types of deductions to lower your overall tax rate, I don't think it's probably going to be a net positive for you. It's probably going to be a net negative overall, unless you own your own business, you have a pass-through entity, like I said, that will be taxed at that lower rate as opposed to your ordinary income tax rate. So, frankly, I think it helps me personally and people like me, but I don't think it's going to help the average citizen that much. So that's kind of my take on the tax bill and where we are from here. Now, this is InvestTalk 101, and here are four free apps that could help you track your spending or savings. These have been recommended by Investopedia.com. First is BillGuard. It's a personal finance security service to track spending, protect your credit cards from fraud and errors. Then there's Check. It's an award-winning app that helps you track your bills and monitor your bank accounts and credit cards. Level Money, this is a relative newcomer to the personal finance app space, and Level Money is an award-winning app that acts as a mobile money meter so you can track your daily cash flow, which I think will be helpful for a lot of people to really clamp down on their spending. And then Mint.com, personal finance, this has been around for a long time. I use Mint. Allows you to track, build, manage your budgets and your savings and spending, and it's very helpful, at least for me. Now, do you have any apps that you want to share? I'd love to hear it. I'd love to help our audience figure out what apps help them. Now, do you have a? Give us a call right now at 888-99-CHART and send me. You can send me a note as well by going to investtalk.com and clicking on the contact us button.
What can you learn about yourself by answering a handful of questions online? Well, just how much investment risk you really feel comfortable with. Take our free risk analysis quiz, and then if you'd like, KPP Financial can help you determine if your current retirement portfolio is a good match. Click on the Invest Talk tab right there on investtalk.com.
Hi, Steve, Justin. This is Vincent calling from Texas. I had a question about options, and I have 48 shares that were granted to me by my company that I can execute before the 31st of January 2018. So I'm trying to read and get a little bit more understanding of what's the best approach. Do I go ahead and execute these 48 shares, or can I just hold them and transfer them over? I also have a brokerage account with some company stock that I had already bought years ago. Should I just add it to that, or do I just sell it outright? I have to make a decision. If I don't do anything and they expire, I've just lost them all. So right now the grant price is $68.75. And it looks like the stock closed today at $116.78. I do have a few more weeks to go before I have to make a decision. So that's why I'm calling, just to get a little bit more understanding to find out which way is the best opportunity to go. So I will listen for your reply or response on air. And thanks a lot. You guys do really great work, and I appreciate you.
Well, the first thing you have to consider, in, especially since you already stated that you already have shares at another brokerage account, is what percentage of that total is of your total nest egg, right? Your total assets. And we would certainly recommend that you not have more than 10% of your assets in your company stock. You see, throughout history, you've seen companies that really tank, and when you're tied to, your income is tied to that company as well as your retirement, it really can wipe out your entire nest egg. So you certainly want to diversify away from it. So if it's 10% or more currently of your total retirement holdings, then I would execute those options and sell them and just move that money out or into a 401k, whatever, from a tax perspective would make the most sense. And that's something you need to talk with your accountant about. I'm not sure how, if these options are in a tax-deferred account, are they just in a brokerage account that will be taxable? You need a little more detail on that, but I would talk to your accountant about that. Now, if it isn't currently larger than 10% of your overall portfolio, you can certainly execute them, transfer them to that brokerage account, and hold them. That's nothing wrong with that. You probably need some capital to do that, and you need to consider that as well, what capital you would need to execute and hold those positions, whereas if you just sell them, you can just take that money, whatever the value of those options are. So there's a lot of details that I don't know, and if you like, I'd love to sit down and maybe dig into this a little bit deeper with you. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button, shoot me an email, let me know a little bit more details. We can maybe some times that we can talk and get more details on this and point you in the right direction. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We have about, 12 minutes left in the show, 10 minutes left in the show. So if you're going to call us, give us a call sooner rather than later. Now, let's talk about retirement planning. And it can there's the broad strokes of what your income is, what your strategy should be for your retirement assets, what your expenses are going to be. Those are kind of the broad brush strokes that really matter. But there's other ones that can matter as well, sometimes in a small way, sometimes in a big way. And there are many things that aren't apparent to the average person, and let's talk a little bit about that. Number one are required minimum distributions. We deal with this every single year with clients because we have many clients that are over the age of 70. So once you're at 70 and a half, you are required to take distributions from your IRAs or 401ks each year. And it starts relatively small when you hit 70 and a half, but they increase in percentage as you get older and older up until the age of 115 if you make it that long. Now, withdrawals from these account types are treated as taxable income, which means you owe income tax on whatever you're taking out, even if you're forced to take it out. Remember, the reason is because IRAs, 401ks are tax deferred, and eventually government wants their money, right? Government wants their money. And this can increase your taxable income, and that exposes you to Medicare and Social Security benefit taxation as well. And it could increase your Medicare Part B costs. So that's something to consider. And then moving into Medicare, premiums can also eat up your Social Security increases. You get Social Security increases on a regular basis, but also your Medicare premiums also go up as well. Number three, it can get harder to wait out a bad market, and that's why you want to get more conservative. That's why most of our retirees are in our balanced income strategy, a moderate strategy all about income, corporate bonds, dividend paying stocks, and because it tends to be a lot less volatile than the overall market. And when you're retired, you can't deal with a bear market as easily because you're not putting more money away. So, and then lastly, there's a few other ones, but those are kind of the main things that you need to understand, and that retiring requires, sometimes you get bored, you get depressed, and you still need to fill your day with exciting things, things to do.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Okay, let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Steve, I have a question about bonds. I have an Oppenheimer International A-Share Bond Fund, and I put my dividends back in each month. Am I paying that 4.75%? Each time I put my dividend back in.
Yes, you are. Most of them is the way that happens is yes, you are. Are you buying it direct from Oppenheimer or are you going through a broker?
When I set it up, it was through a broker.
Check it, but generally speaking, the answer would be yes. He gets a fee every time you buy it. The only reason why I know that is I have a brother-in-law. It wasn't through Oppenheimer, through somebody else, but a big firm like that. Mm-hmm. And he did the same thing. He was reinvesting the dividends. You know, it was a very small hit every time he reinvested those dividends. But I said, they should get rid of that completely. And all it took for him was a phone call.
A phone call to who?
To Oppenheimer, through the brokerage firm.
And then the brokerage firm does what?
Waives his fee on the dividend reinvestments. Remember, it's not a lot of money to him. He's not going to make you mad just because, you know, it's just an automatic thing.
I will check.
Yeah, so you got to check that out. I mean, that's something you don't want to just let it go.
Another question about bonds?
Sure.
I get really confused about bonds and how the NAV versus the yield.
It's confusing to a lot of people. Try to remember when you're buying a bond fund as opposed to buying a bond directly, operates a little bit differently. If you bought a bond directly, you could just hold on to that bond, let it mature, and you get your money back plus the interest. But during the time that you're waiting for it to mature, that bond can go up and down in value, right?
Yes.
Bonds go up in value generally when interest rates go down. Now, why is that so? Okay, real simple. If you bought a 10-year bond today paying 5%, tomorrow, if the interest rates go down to 4%, I'm, of course, obviously exaggerating. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, the interest rates for that same bond is now 4%. Isn't your bond worth more at 5% than what you paid for it just the day before? Because now the new ones are 4%. So your bond's paying a whole 1% higher. So the value of your bond actually went up because now bonds are paying less yield. So it's an inverse relationship. When interest rates go down, bond values go up. So in a mutual fund, you first want to know what kind of bonds do they invest in. Do you happen to know, Mike?
Yes, I have a Morningstar software, so I have all 150 bonds that are in it.
Are they junk bonds? Are they government bonds?
All U.S. Treasury note, Japan government, Ireland Republic, Belgium,
okay.
On and on.
International, so they're going everywhere in the world.
Yes.
Then it makes your job a little harder because you have to know what the interest rates are going on in all those different countries. Mike, generally speaking, if the interest rate's going down, Your bond value goes up.
Okay.
If interest rates are going up in general, your NAV, net asset value, will go down. Question.
Thank you, Steve. Bye.
Thank you. Good night. We'll go to George in San Diego. How are you doing, George?
Fine. Thank you, sir. What is your opinion of trust deeds?
Are you a first trustee or second trustee?
First ones only.
First trustee. Mm-hmm. I like them. Okay. George, you mind if I explain it real quick for everybody else what they are?
Yeah. How much risk is there involved?
Okay. And I'll touch on that. A trust deed is where you're talking about a piece of property, everybody, and You are the bank. You're the bank. Think of you're the one carrying the mortgage. That's what a trust deed is. A trust deed is a mortgage carrier. So let's say someone buys an office building and they need $300,000, and that's a first trust deed. In other words, the first trust deed means you're the first position. First position means that if something goes wrong, you get paid first.
Right.
Okay? So first trust deeds I'm very happy with. Second trust deeds I'm not so happy with. But it also depends on how much equity. In other words, if you loan $300,000 and the building's worth $1 million, and you're the first trustee of $300,000, there's very little risk there.
Exactly.
Because you're going to get your money, even if the guy goes bankrupt on this building, whether it's an office building or a retail shopping center, I don't care, whatever it is.
I still get my money back.
You'll get your money back.
Right.
So the risk, George, goes to how much equity is in there. And if you have 50% coverage, meaning that there's no more than 50% debt as a first trustee, he can have more debt than that, by the way. But as a first trustee, yours, you don't care about those second guys.
You just care about first.
Yeah, that's right, because you're going to get paid first. So as long as you have coverage of 50% or more, that's a very low risk, in my opinion. Now, it's not that liquid, meaning you can't just get your money tomorrow. That's not going to happen. No. It's a mortgage.
They say they only keep their money for 1 year.
A one-year trustee, is that what they are?
Yeah.
Okay, because they want to get you out of there, probably because they're paying a high interest rate. There's nothing wrong with them, George. The fear is, let's say they go under.
Yeah.
Okay, let's say that happens. You won't get your money immediately. That doesn't happen. They got to then sell the property. You got to foreclose on them.
Oh, yeah, got to wait, you know, wait.
Yeah. But they are very good income producers. So I think that's a good part of your overall investment strategy. I think it's a good idea.
Okay, Steve, thank you very much.
Thanks, George. Appreciate the call.
I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Peasley and I appreciate you spending your time with us this hour. And on behalf of the whole KPP family, I thank you for listening, and let's do this again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.